Welcome to Info Nation, UIC's very own podcast created by students for students. At Info Nation, we discover how media, information, and communication are created, governed, and used. Produced by upper-level students in the Department of Communication, Info Nation brings academic research to help make sense of our increasingly mediated society. We go to the library so you don't have to.
All right, welcome. My name is Alex, and I'm here with my co-host Edgar, Jonathan, Sonia, and Anna Paula. Today we have two special guests, but first we'll be addressing the most important questions of the week. Where do you get the music you listen to? As well as what are your thoughts about music piracy? Let's hear what various students around UIC think.
Where do you get most of your music from?
Sometimes I'll use Spotify,
radio stations.
Download it.
Have you ever pirated music before?
Like when I was like 12.
Oh no, I use Spotify on my phone.
So what are your thoughts about pirating?
I mean, it's unfair to like the artist.
No, I don't mind it.
From what we heard of this small sample size of UIC students, there are diverse ways that millennials get their music, but the general consensus around piracy is that it doesn't seem to be that bad of a behavior. Today's topic will dive into the social and environmental factors that contribute to music piracy and the beliefs surrounding them, and also why we're against music piracy.
The reason why music piracy is such a big issue is because of the social norms. Friends present a huge risk factor for influencing the opinion and decision to commit music piracy. There is a large influence of peers towards illegal downloading that emphasizes the relationship between social norms and music piracy. A study was conducted by Marana and Kim in 2015 that tested different facets of mindfulness that are associated with friends to see how or why it encourages music piracy intentions in young adults. University students were asked questions regarding their personal experience and views with music piracy, along with the background questions pertaining to their personality and behaviors online. It was clear that friends present a risk factor for influencing the opinion and decision to commit music piracy. This relationship between social norms and music piracy is strongly connected by the fact that most illegal downloads are made by young adults who are constantly immersed with social life on and off the internet.
An example of social norms is file sharing. File sharing is pretty common. Sharing happens through social media or via email, and some people are pretty unaware that sharing a music file in such a way can be considered as illegal activity.
An aspect that often isn't considered in music piracy behavior is how the film, music, and news industry frames illegal downloading. To speak a little more on that, here's Dr. Zayong Yang, an associate professor of marketing in the College of Business at the University of Texas at Arlington. His research dives into the differential effects of social influence sources on self-reported music piracy.
There are many reasons behind that. One of the major reasons is mixed messages sent from the public media. So let's say that, okay? You know, on one hand, the industry is spending money on promoting these lawsuits, right? So they write articles, all of these. On the other hand, if you look at movies, right? So lots of movies, they feature the stars. They actually view this piracy as a very smart way, right? So you can hack into ATM machine to get money. Look at Sakur, right? So all of these, like lots of movies will feature genies of computer guys, they actually, because of the hacking to machine, they actually prevent from bigger disaster to the world. I see the good reason behind that. But on the other hand, it also delivers the mixed images to people. The second thing is the industry tend to disclose very detailed information about piracy. Let's say that they were for that the lawsuits against the Boston University student. So some of the papers will write very details about where this student gets the access to the website and how this person did this. So essential idea is that disclose so much of the detailed information, then it can educate. On the one hand, you can educate the bad side of piracy, alert people that this is illegal action. On the other hand, you tell people that there are certain websites which they were not aware of. So then they want to take a look, and then all of these, right? So also movies feature these stars. They're actually hacking other people's machine. Piracy becomes a very cool thing. So these sort of same mixed things.
Now it is important to address the absence of threats and punishments due to music piracy. An interesting study by Levin and Manolis found that the absence of threats from students' past downloading experiences is a restricted set of conditions that leads to continuous illegal behaviors in the future. This study provided surveys to undergrads that gave them different scenarios that produced different punishments or outcomes from downloading music, in which students were to respond based on their level of fear. Data supports that the stronger and more significant threatening appeals are more effective in stopping music piracy. Therefore, the absence of threats from students' past downloading experiences is the restricted set of condition that leads to continuous illegal behaviors in the future. This raises the importance of implementing stricter laws and punishments to those who commit illegal downloading. To add further comments, let's hear what Dr. Yang has to say about this.
Well, is this deterrence, this kind of legal actions from the industry, is this truly impactful or not? So this is essential issue is, this is actually the focus in many ways I want to understand. So from that, I collected published papers. So we collected 300 and close to 400 papers and then screen on them, try to understand whether other people have found this or not. It's not just from my own research. So this we call the meta-analysis. So I'm almost done, and it took me a long time. So from that angle, what I found was that there are mixed views. However, overall, so the overall model show that indeed they have impact. So it's not saying it's wasted. It's actually have impact. Deterrence has impact. But in many cases, especially for software piracy, is mainly from indirect way, which means it's not, you don't look at, if you people look at deterrence and behavior, so then you find that mixed findings. Some people find that, yes, there's impact. Other people say no. For example, right after this Boston University student got lawsuit, and there are journalists that went to Carnegie Mellon University campus, ask these, because these are the major computer science students are there and top score in the world, to ask the students, so have you heard about that? And some people say yes, some people say no. So even if for those people, and then if you haven't heard about this news, they tell you that this is the news, so then ask you. So to what extent do you think piracy is really bad? Okay. If I remember it correctly, you can check the news. 98% of the students, after hearing the news, saying, well, piracy is normal. Right. So piracy, you know, are you going to engage in illegal downloading, this sort of thing? Well, people say, well, look at that, right? So if I got a chance, you know, during the circumstances, whatever, they give different reasons. But the end outcome is basically if you interpret their answers, say yes. So 98 out of 100 students, they say yes. I'm still engaged. So essential idea is it looks like that, right? Majority of things should deterrence doesn't work. But what we found was that it's actually through indirect way. So it's not going to day one. So right after this incident, you ask people. People are going to get scared and say, no, I don't want to do that anymore because of these legal actions. They don't do that. So this is gradually impact people. So what we found was that it's actually through indirect. So indirect, like impact people, gradually impacted the attitude toward piracy. How you give a suggestion to your friends whether piracy is good or bad, your intention, your ethical value, all of these are gradually impact you. So essential idea is, long story short, overall, what we found out of these so many articles, what we found out is deterrence still has effect, mainly through indirect paths. That's the core conclusion.
Economy. Because money makes the world go round. Based on a study I was reading by Dr. Gopal, Age and education seem to serve as economical factors on willingness to pirate. With the price of music fluctuating based on artists' perceived value, many individuals tend to purchase music based on if they can afford it, if they feel that an artist's music is of value to them, and if they are old enough to have stable income. Regardless, many artists do need to get paid. They get the revenue mainly from streaming services and music sales, but even with the need to be paid, individuals are less likely to pirate if they place high value on the music they listen to intrinsically, and if they can afford it.
Advertisements can help divert people from pirating. Free downloads and streaming use advertisements to make their content free. If economy is a profound concern, then this could act as an alternative.
Ethics, what's right and wrong? In an article by Altshuler, they conclude their ethical study by saying students feel morally just as technology gets more advanced. For example, let's say I was living back in the 80s, I would need physical pieces of technology to copy music files back from one piece to another. But living in the 21st century, I'm able to obtain any music I virtually want with two clicks on my mouse. Altshuler is saying that people are morally okay when pirating as technology advances. So at this time, I would like to bring in Professor Podrazic. Professor Podrazic is the television curator at the Museum of Broadcast Communication here in Chicago. He is the co-author of 10 books, including Watching TV, 8 Decades of American Television. He teaches here at the University of Illinois at Chicago as a lecturer in the Department of Communication, with a crossover into the Political Science Department. I would like to give Professor Podrazic a big thanks for joining us. Here he is. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. I just began my day listening to music for free on the radio, and started me in a positive mood, and then I continued that positive mood driving into the campus area, listening to Sirius XM, mm-hmm. which is a monthly fee service, but gives me a wide variety of music that I can choose from and play to my heart's content.
Well, we know how you get music now, because you just mentioned you have your subscription service, but how did you obtain music when you were younger?
If you wished to acquire your favorite music, which is, oh, my friend has a copy of this disc, whether it be vinyl, this tape, or this CD, I would like to make a copy of that on my own. I'm going to purchase blank tape, put it into the recorder, and it's not as if I'm doing something that is unexpected, because for instance, in the 70s and 80s, especially in the 80s, you could purchase cassette boom boxes, which were dual cassette. That is, it was designed so that you could play something in the first cassette panel and record it into the cassette that's in the second slot.
Was that a common practice, taking your friend's music for your own?
Probably not, not as common as you would think, only because there were technical barriers to it. Namely, you had to possess the equipment that allowed you to take something from one source and record it onto another source.
What changed in the process of time? Why do people pirate music, in other words?
Couple things changed the equation, and digital would be the first explanation. Namely, that when you were dealing with physical copies that were vinyl or cassettes, I mean, you actually see, this is what I now possess. With digital, you had this disc that you plugged in, but yes, there was this little meter that would say, this is the first track, this is the fourth track, but other than that, it was all the same.
So when do you think it shifted to it being easier for consumers to, pirate music, and when the sales of physical albums declined?
There's a lot of interrelated factors coming in, and I've already left out, and I should mention, an important aspect, which was legal repercussions if you pirated music. The RIAA, representatives of the recording industry, had some very public, deliberately public, pursuits of classic case would be like the grandma who didn't even realize she had downloaded illegally 10 songs and was sued for tens of thousands of dollars because this was pirating music.
Do you think that age factors at all into the pirating?
Age does factor into this mainly by experience. It's not just because you're younger, therefore it's okay, but rather this is all you've experienced.
Exactly.
So the idea of saying, let's put it this way, when this has been always your world, you are not starting at the point of saying, I don't know if this is okay, let me think about it, I guess it's okay. That first part of the equation is gone, because it's always been okay, or it's always been something that you've done. Even if you never saw a declaration saying this is legal or this is not illegal, you say, well, of course, all my friends do it, I do it, and there's a problem. And so that's the foundation for saying I can do whatever I want to do with the music that I've acquired in whatever way I've acquired it. Basically, back in, say when the Beatles first hit the U.S., and you bought a single, and you say you paid a dollar for it, that would be the equivalent to paying about nearly $8 today. And so, even move it ahead 20 years or so, go to the 1980s, a $15 album in 1980 would be about a $50 album today.
And you'd pay for the experience. Let's call it the experience. You'd pay for the experience,
the
right?
The package, yeah.
The package. A record today would also cost $15, give or less. And I did my own research. Mm-hmm. I found that an artist is compensated for less than a dollar if they're signed to a generic label, let's say.
Yeah.
For that experience. Do you think artists are fairly compensated nowadays for their work?
The short answer to the question, are artists fairly compensated these days, is no, they aren't. Now, if you happen to be Bruce Springsteen or representatives of the Beatles or the Rolling Stones, you're probably going to be better compensated than just about anybody else. But that's because it's not because you are a better musician. It's because you now have a stable of lawyers on your side. You now have agents and negotiators on your side, and so that you can leverage every opportunity. But let's go back to that just starting out, or frankly, an artist has maybe a couple of albums out, a couple of releases. They're caught in so many traps to getting fair recompense for their creative work. Let's say you're on a streaming service. There's a lot of flat fee paying on a streaming service. If you do some digging online and look at reports that individual artists have given, it's like, okay, here's the $17 I made the last reporting period. Here's the $22 I made. I owe them $5, whatever. So the structure is really tricky for artists to be compensated if there's any kind of middle layer involved.
So we see developing social constructs within music piracy, and this is kind of a send-off, but I had the privilege of taking a course taught by you called Future of Television. I kind of want to use that as a means of transitioning. Can you give us a perspective on the future of music piracy?
The future is going to be not just the desires of the consumers, but the strategies of the music distributors. And I think we're looking to more, not fewer, limits. Make an analogy with what Microsoft is doing with the licensing of its software as opposed to the outright sale. I have to pay something every year just to use a word processing program. Well, the same may be the case, and in fact, the same is the case if you look at things like streaming music and all. The moment that you stop paying for it is the moment it all disappears. You don't have that anymore. And so, looking to the future, I would say be ready to pay more in general, but be ready to demand more of the music and the ability to use the music that you really care about. So it may be that you will spend the $10 or you will spend the $15 for the album, as long as you could do whatever the heck you want in your personal listening.
Wally, I'd like to thank you for giving your time to interview with us. I really appreciate that.
Thank you for taking the time to come and chat about what's really the lifeblood of creativity.
All right. Thank you to Professor Pedrazic and Dr. Yang for joining us today. With everything we've discussed, it's obvious that there are many factors relating to individuals and the piracy of music. In the digital age, here in the 21st century, it's virtually impossible to not be exposed to certain social, ethical, or economical factors that encourage piracy. However, as we've said, piracy is a behavior that undermines many legal, economical, and ethical protocols. It is important to understand all the factors involved with this act. Thanks for listening to InfoNation, coming to you from the University of Illinois at Chicago Department of Communication. Our theme music was created by Sean Risby, a 2015 graduate. We hope you picked your interest and you learned something new today. Please feel free to engage by rating, commenting, or sharing our episodes. I'm Jonathan Caliso with Edgar Corona, Anna Paula Mejia, Sonia Ahmed, and Alex Van Anroy. Thank you for listening. We go to the library so you don't have to. And remember, always eat your broccoli.